Accession number 28147, Reel 2.
Situation. Well, we took Theodore. And, as is usual, the battalion that took a place, they were relieved the same night. And we were relieved that night. Came back into Albert. And then, on the 27th, no, on the 28th of that day, it was only 2 days after we took Thiebel, we were told that we were going to attack Schwaben Redoubt. Now that was an underground fortress. I might say that I had been made up to Lance Corporal before that time. And the inside of that fort was a mass of tunnels. For people, we had a lecture, all NCOs, we had a lecture before we went in. So we knew exactly what we could do and what we couldn't do. I suppose they'd got all the intelligence all for different prisoners that had been taken. So the case was after that, the first beginning, there was no case that if you took it, there's a case you've got to take it, was the front of the fort. And from there, there were several hundred tunnels that run right the way back, right down ever so deep in the hole. We knew that was all there. But the point was that you couldn't get a lot of men down these different tunnels. You couldn't get a battalion down, you couldn't get a platoon or anything. The most you could get was a section, same as what I was in charge of about six or seven men. Well, before we left Albert to go there, we knew what we'd got to do. I knew exactly where I'd got to go with my six men, or seven, I don't know, six or seven. And we were all issued with 2 mils bombs. Now, no one had ever known when we're going into an attack that everyone should have 2 mils bombs. Now, we left Albert at night, in the night, and went to Crucifix Corner outside Albert. And you turn left there to get to where Schwaben Redoubt was. And although my memory is good, as you're all aware of that, I do not remember a single thing after passing Crucifix Corner. What happened? I don't know. I know this because of the official reports. We took Schwaben Redoubt. I've got a fair idea that what happened in Swaben Redoubt. But I was not going to tell you what I think happened, because at the start of this, I told you it was all truth, nothing but the truth. If I tell you what I think's happened down Swaben Redoubt, that's going to break that sequence. So I should not tell you. If at the end of these talks anyone wants to know what I think happened, I'm quite willing to tell them. But there's this much I am certain of. Whatever happened at Swaben Redoubt was so terrible that my brains couldn't take it. I don't know what happened, and I never have known, and I hope that I never do know really what happened, because I'm certain it must have been very, very terrible. Well, that was the end of that. I'm rather running by myself now, in a way. Just trying to think how things worked out after that. Oh, I know. We went in the line some time after that. And I was detailed from battalion headquarters that I was to go out of the line right the way back through the transport lines to bring a platoon of another regiment, as the other regiment were relieving us. And I'd got to bring one of the platoons into the front line. The trench system at that time there was like a maze. You either knew it or you didn't. If you didn't know it, well, you was in a proper mess because you soon got lost. I did know it, so I had no trouble there. But when you got to the coming out of the line, up to the end or the beginning, if you like, whichever way you were going, of the communication trench, you dropped into a sunken roadway. Well, the Germans, that was the only way into the line, our people had got to come through down that sunken roadway. That was about, well, I suppose, about a mile and a half, a mile and three quarters of it. And every night, the Germans continued to strafe it with shells and everything, so that it was impossible to relieve one regiment or another. So that someone had a brainwave higher up, I suppose, that should be happening in the daytime. Well, when I got out of the trenches, and that was battalion headquarters right there, the beginning of the communication trench, I stopped there and talked to one or two chaps that I knew. And I said, there's a shelling down the through the this is a sunken roadway, because up the side, people, I saw a chap on the top above, and he was like a little midget like that standing up there, so you can tell how deep it was, this sunken roadway. And they said, if you take your time and watch it, yeah, Germans are so regimental, they'll drop a salvo of five, and then there's about 5 or 6 minutes, perhaps longer, before there's any more. So if you wait, you can get through without any casualties. Oh, I said, well, I've got to go and fetch a platoon through there. He said, well, you stop here a little while, I should. He says, no one won't know. They won't know how long ago you are. He said, you stop. He said, you'll see that the shells come over, he said, and there. And then he said, you take the time then before the next lot come over. So I stayed there. Saw this salvo come over. And then I timed it. I forget exactly how long the time was before the next lot came. He said, oh, no, you know. He said, that's the same like that all day long, he said. You can keep that. I said, righto. So that was clear then. I said, I'll roll off. But when I got through to the transport lines, what regiment should it be that was relieving us was the Cambridgeshire Regiment. I thought to myself, well, I'll go and find someone that I know now. And I went all through their lines and everything, and they never see a soul that I knew. So where they were, I don't know. And then an officer came to me, he said, you from the Berkshires? I said, yes. He said, he didn't say what platoon he was. You've got to take me into the front line. I said, very good, sir. And there was another chap with him. And this chap, he, as we walked along, he walked with me and the officer. The other chaps behind. Then when we got to the beginning of the sunken road, I said, well, stop here, sir, and we'll wait a few minutes, give everyone a rest. And then I said, well, we don't stop no more till we get right through to the other end. No one stops. Go as hard as we can. And Mr. Chap was with the officer. He kept talking to me. And anyway, we started when I thought it was right to go. And away we went. And I was pleased to think that I got through and I hadn't got a casualty. Oh, now, the lady, it's a funny thing, I think, and I'll put this in now. The lady that is writing all this in a book at Lowestoft, she sent me a photograph one day of her uncle. But I hadn't done it. She didn't tell me who it was, because this, I got that first. I pulled that out and I looked at it. I thought to myself, I knew this chap. Because this is only, what, a few years ago, 2 or 3 years ago. I've got it at home now. And I thought to myself, I knew this fella. And I sat thinking there, I was up in my own room, and I sat thinking about that for a long while. And then it hit me. It was the chap that I walked with down that sunken roadway that day in the Cambridgeshire Regiment. And that was this lady's uncle. He was killed about the last day of the war. So it shows what a small world this is in. Well, now where we got to now? Finished with Swarvenry there, finished with that. Yes. I hardly know myself. Well, it came on to the Christmas, that's what. We came out, we was out of the line at Christmas. Came out right the way back. The whole division and Army Corps had all been thrown right the way back because there was no trenches and everything was so bad and that kind of thing. It just, there was no chance of any attack, whether one way or the other. So everything was quite quiet except for the shelling and that kind of thing. And we were brought back to a village called Ducat, D-U-C-A-T. That is about 4 kilometres from Abbeville. Well, at that, we had our Christmas dinner, and the officers were allowed, they pleased themselves, they could have the money for the Christmas dinner for the troops, or and spend it and make what dinner what they thought, or they could have the ordinary army rations. Well, our officers decided to have the money, and they bought a pig. Well, that was all right. Didn't matter what trade you wanted when you was in the army. There was always one of them in, and they found the butchers anyway. It was there to kill the pig, dress it and do everything. And the cooks roasted that whole outside, you know, turned it over and round and round and round on Christmas morning. And that was certainly a very fine Christmas dinner. We had that, vegetables and greens, mince pies, plum pudding, and tins of milk. Really a scrumptious dinner. We're out there. Oh, we had, there was a large barrel of French beer. Enough beer for anyone. Drink yourself to silly with it if you liked. And that was the Christmas of 1916. That was my Christmas. And then that came, we went back into the line, oh, I suppose towards the end of January. We went in the line once or twice. Then we was out. And then we were going up into the line again. And I felt very queer that morning. I did feel ill. And as we were going into the line, I thought, well, I can't go sick, that's a certainty. So we were marching along, and when you were going, I don't know what distance you were going, you walked for 50 minutes and rested for 10. And we'd been walking for 50 minutes, and we fell out for the 10 minutes. When the whistle went for me to get up off the ground, I couldn't get up. The MO, he came along, called me everything under the sun, Why didn't you go sick this morning? What you should have done. I said, the answer to that is the same as what you know as well as I do. I said, if I'd have gone sick, they'd have said, I only went sick so as to get out of going into the line. I said, I wasn't going to have that. But at any rate, he didn't talk to me long, and he went to fetch a limber up. And I don't remember them picking me up and putting me in this limber, which they must have done. The next thing I remember, that I was in hospital at ETAPS in a 6th Canadian hospital. I hadn't heard a woman speak since the time I left England, and I heard something down the end of the ward. And I said, what the deuce is that? Well, I said, that's the nurse talking down there. I never heard such a squeaky thing in all my life. I wonder what it was. Well, the doctor came round, and he turned round to the nurse and he said, keep him quiet. Put him on milk diet. I don't know if you can get very fat on that. But the milk diet turned out very good. I know it was everything in the milk diet. Chicken and every other thing in there. What I suppose how people would call a light diet, I suppose, something like that. Well, I was there a fortnight, and then he said I could get up. Well, no sooner than he was up, there was no say you couldn't walk about the ward and go back to bed at night. He was finished. And it went straight away, once you got up, to a convalescent camp in ETAPS. There was two convalescent camps, one in ETAPS and one at KU, but you went to one in ETAPS first, and they examined you there, and if you was bad enough, or been bad enough, I suppose, you went to KU for a fortnight. Well, I was sent to KU for a fortnight. That's for a little fishing village. They said it was right opposite Brighton. Whether it is or not, I don't know. Well, after a fortnight there, I was then sent down to the base at Rouen. I might say that while I was in hospital at ETAPS in the 6th Canadian, I had my birthday. that was that much in it. I know when it was. That was March the 12th when I was in there. And went back to the base at Rouen. And that's where I saw Beach Thomas. He was what the Daily Mail said on the top. Reports from a military correspondent straight from the front line. Page Thomas. I don't know what any of you remember Columbo with his old on the television with his Mac and everything. Columbo was just like Beach Thomas. He never went near the front line in his life. He was down to the base of Rouen looking after. Going round, all the book chaps would come down wounded, ready to go back again. Getting tales out of them. He never spoke to me and I didn't speak to him. I'd have told him a rare tale if he'd have spoke to me. Yeah, he'd give him something to report. But then I went back, sent back up to my regiment. And the first time that I went or was going into the line, I hadn't got into the line, I just got to the entrance to the communication trench. And a shell came over. And lucky for me, I must have had my arm out. That I can't show you on there, but here. My arm like that, more or less. And the shell was a dud one. So it didn't explode, but it went through there. Now, you know what a top does, a spinning top goes round and round and round and round. That's how that done with me. I went round and round and round and round. I couldn't stop myself, impossible. I was just like a top going round. And when that stopped, that threw me face down down on the ground. They picked me up. And when I got up, all my clothes, equipment and everything, all the way down like that, had gone somewhere. And my arm, from the elbow to the wrist, was bigger than my thighs. That's that difference in a few seconds. So I was sent back to the 3rd Australian Hospital at Abbeville. And there, that was looked after, and I don't know what they put all, but cotton more than one thing or another. I don't know how long I was there. And then that was the same all round again, down to Rouen, and then back up to the regiment again. Well, when I got back, there was a sergeant there. He came out from London and he'd got Boer War ribbons up. And it's rather surprising, it was the only one I ever saw out there, because during that First War, any chaps who joined up and had experience in the Boer War, they gave them 3 stripes, and they were teaching recruits in England. But he'd got out there, and there was in our battalion, in my platoon. Well, for some reason or other, he didn't like me. I can't say as I liked him a lot. But everything that I did, I was doing wrong. It didn't matter what I did. And any rate, we had got to a place in a field there, a steam board just off Ypres. And he got on to me, he was going like anything, and I suppose I lost my blessed temper. Well, no, I did. And I said a lot what I shouldn't have done, if I'd had any sense. And then he said, we're going into the line tomorrow.